think about a brand or just creating a product, it all needs to be a story. And if the CMF of that product, this packaging, is creating an experience of that story through our perception of it, then you need to understand it to then design for it and create something cool.
Hi, and welcome to Package Design Unboxed. Excited to share today's episode, where we get to geek out on CMF and MDD. Today's guest is Katie Kubrick, Materials and Insights Producer with Nirvana CPH, a creative production house based in London. There's a lot to learn in this episode as we dig into the science behind material selection and how understanding materials can create deeper consumer connections. Stick around and hear about Katie's favorite new materials for the moment. Today we've got Katie Kubrick, Materials and Insight Producer with Nirvana CPH. Out of London. Katie, thank you so much for joining us. I'm so excited to talk to you.
No, thank you so much for having me. Like this is incredible. Thank you so much.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm so stoked. I've been following Nirvana for years. For the listeners out there that are not familiar with Nirvana, can you tell us a little bit about Nirvana and what you do there?
Of course. So at Nirvana, I head up Materials and Insights department, which basically covers anything to do with research and development, material library, sustainability, material audits, etc. But as a company in general, we are a creative production house, which means we bring different acumens from the sector together. And these include design, technology solutions, materials, trends, research, prototyping, and then sustainable creative production. And all of these together combined give us a certain, differentiator within the industry. What I mean by that is having materials as almost a center of what we do allows us to better write material and sustainable stories for the projects that we work with. And in general, you know, what's quite omnipresent in at Nirvana is that we all share the feeling and love for materials, and we feel that every good idea can be made better. It can be great if we spend enough time, especially at the beginning of the project, of the process, of, you know, the design stage, etc., thinking about what color, material, and finish we should use for that particular application, because then in the grand scheme of things, that will not only allow us to create a better user experience through being able to mindfully design certain sensory experiences, like, you know, the tactile element, the visual element, the audible element, but also that will allow us to write a better sustainable story for that particular packaging or a product. Because if we, from the very beginning, start with choosing the color, material, and finish, then we're also choosing the sustainable story that we want to write. And all of these three elements will create a big impact of what we make on, you know, on the environment and everything that surrounds us.
So if we begin with design and, you know, I've chosen materials and color as part of that initial design without really thinking through
yeah.
sustainable story, I've locked myself into using a specific kind of an ink and maybe a specific supplier in a certain region because they're the only ones I can make.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden from this design snowballs into all these other decisions that happen versus really looking at the whole story that we want to tell and then selecting a supplier that can execute within a certain region with certain materials and certain inks and certain combinations.
That's exactly it. So usually the typical process of creation would start with, you know, exploring, let's say, the aesthetics, the visuals, the shapes, and getting some inspiration for color, for a material, but not really thinking it through to, like, not deep diving into it, so to speak. Therefore, our process kind of flips that a little bit. So you actually focus on choosing this color, material, and finish first. And then by understanding it and all the ins and outs of it, you can better explore creating something that stands out, you know, just a little bit more, because you are actually pushing the material because you understand it. And if you understand the material, you can not only push it in production, but then you can also understand how you can dispose of it. So in the current context of circular economy model getting a lot of traction and perhaps becoming, you know, the dominant guide of how we design and build our businesses and products in the future, that becomes consistent with that. So you choose that sustainable story first, then you design exploring and creating something quite innovative and unique, and then you basically move into production. And when you're at this production stage, because you've selected everything at the beginning as well, and you already have, you know, the supplier connection, and you know how to explore the process, you're actually speed tracking your project. Because quite often what tends to happen is if you come to us or any other production house with a ready design and you want to make something sustainable in a week, in a day, this quite often, you know, doesn't really happen and cannot allow us to create the best possible solution for that project. And it often, you know, it's a lot of, let's say, design and passion pain, because you just really want to make something so great. But if you don't have enough time and the timeline in general didn't allow it at the beginning, then you're stressing and rushing and, you know, you need to accomplish this and this and that, and all the different things are just popping up, which wouldn't if you were to adopt that, we call it CMF, design and material driven approach. And this is a very niche field within design, but it allows you to kind of flip that process. Yeah.
Within packaging, you know, we always hear of CMF as just one of the phases. Can you explain a little bit about what your methodology is behind CMF and material driven design?
Of course. So maybe to start with, to anyone in the audience that might not be aware of what CMF is. CMF stands for color, material, and finish, and it's that niche field of expertise within the design industry, which basically allows you to do what I've been describing, starting with selecting these three elements. And then once, you know, that creative team or designer has these three elements logged, then that person can move into what's called MDD, which is the material-driven design method. And in that design stage, by already understanding the material, how it's made, how can it be processed, and how it can be finished, what sort of colors can be applied to it, coatings, etc., then you're able to design for a tangible experience of that material and therefore the product you're making. Because at the end of the day, when we look at everything around us, it does have a color, a material, and a finish. And how can we not give enough thought and consideration to these elements surrounding us? Because it's not all about the shape. And Vincent really nicely was discussing this as well in earlier episode of the talk, where he was saying sometimes, you know, you don't really need to go out there and try and, you know, create something new. You can create something quite beautiful by just, you know, ensuring this edge is perfect, this, and then, you know, this color looks perfect, this texture looks perfect, and you're able to do it once you're having that material driven design approach.
In the US, there's a variety of different schools for packaging design. Yeah. And packaging engineering. So a lot of times there are the packaging engineers are the ones that are focusing on the CMF and the MDD, where the packaging designers are developing the color choices and the branding and communicating the brand story.
Yeah.
But it sounds like to me with Nirvana, it's more kind of a combination of the design and the engineering.
Yes, you're very, very right and very accurate observation. And I think it's not just that it's all in combination, but in general, we're trying to avoid working in silos. So we would try not only to work with a designer, but we would try and almost be a bridge between, you know, the creative team, then the marketing team, then the procurement team, and perhaps even accounts team, which is assigning a budget to the entire project. And by involving all the different people, especially from the very beginning stage of the project, we are able to, let's say, take a shortcut and address all these elements at the beginning, and then allow the designers and the creative team to use what they're best in, which is designing within that particular selection. And procurement at this stage usually would, for instance, connect us as well with the suppliers that they work with, and we could then, thanks to our knowledge and expertise, almost exploit and push that supplier into finding the new ways of using a particular material or the particular rooster of materials that they have or production processes. And then we can feed that information back to the creative team, which then can take that on board and be like, yeah, this is super cool. Otherwise, we wouldn't have ever known about this. And it is the kind of feedback that we quite often get, because quite often it's all about the know-how and knowing what question to ask. So if you do not have production or material expertise, you might not be able to ask the right question, and therefore that whole opportunity for a certain innovation or pushing a material or a process would just not happen.
And Katie, your approach, and just listening to you listening to you discuss how Nirvana works, so you don't come across as a packaging designer heavy on the branding side. You're coming, what I'm hearing is more of a product designer, an industrial designer that really digs into form, function, materials. Can we take a step back and maybe talk about your background?
Yeah, so very, very accurate observation. My background is product design, and I graduated from Central C. Martins, where basically from year one, I started developing a passion for colors, materials, and finishes. And we had this act about making an organic and natural material at the end of the first year. And that was the kind of thing that clicked. And I began to see everything that surrounds us as basically these three elements. So I'm a bit of a geek when it comes to that. And then, observing that allowed me to see that if you mindfully operate within this field, you can then not only design for a context of sustainability, but also a better sensory experience. And there's just so many examples out there that can be listed as examples for that. After graduating, I've basically been working as a CMF designer and consultant in the topics of color, material, finish, and sustainability, and just digging deeper and deeper and deeper into the field. I started as well a PhD at the Royal College of Art at the end of 2018. Just to, get a bit of more knowledge and information and see how, as well, I guess I can add this little brick of mine into the industry and push it forward, this one little step into using the resources that we have better, if that makes sense. Yeah.
Oh, absolutely.
So, yeah.
So basically, when you look out your window, you see everything into CMF, almost like in the Matrix.
Yeah.
He sees everything as the Matrix. You just see it as CMF.
Yeah, that's a really nice way of putting it. Yes, very true. And my friends definitely say, oh my God, she's on about it again. And especially, I guess, sustainability is such a huge element. So it's also seeing how we mismanage certain resources and, you know, we've got, where I live in London, we have canals not too far. Also, the canal is not too far from our Nirvana's office as well. And it's just so sad to see, you know, plastic bottles or like football balls or just old packaging floating on there, and some birds use it to make their nests, and it's just really painful. And yeah, I want to try and change something, I guess, push it.
Yeah. So as we dig deeper, who do you work with? You know, is it that brands are finding Nirvana, or is it that our agencies finding Nirvana, or suppliers finding Nirvana? Yeah. Who's coming to you, and when do you begin?
I would say we're in a very fortunate position that, having been around for quite some time now, people know about us. So it's a lot about know-how. I mean, the word of mouth, sorry. So yeah, it's people just know about us. They come to us, whether they're a supplier, they're a client, they're an agency. Some of the amazing clients we work with include, you know, like Burberry, Nike, Apple. We're working with Sterling Bank as well, Rosemary Water, for which we did the packaging and the artworks. And we're helping them across lots of different elements, including some technological solutions. Stella McCartney. Yeah, it's an incredible roster. Like, I feel so fortunate to be part of the company, and I think we all just love being with these clients and creating this, you know, making these small changes happen alongside them, and seeing the ripple effect that it has on the industry. And then yes, suppliers come to us as well, you know, showcasing their newest materials. We travel globally as well to see lots of different material conferences. We speak at different conferences as well. So that's how it works usually. It's really nice to be part of this team.
Yeah. So in terms of some of the work that you've done, you've worked with EA Sports
as well. FIFA, yes. Yeah.
Sports, Team of the Year. Yeah. I'm looking at the Rosemary Water packaging. Yeah. Which is a box, and it holds bottles in it. You've got the bottle material, the box material, but then you've also got the EA Sports Team of the Year box, which is like this metal box with a countdown, electronics.
Yeah.
So it's a quite a range of products that you work on.
Yeah, it's a broad spectrum, and then you can see quite a lot of different packaging designs and in that kind of sector on our website. But there is so much more that we do that we don't really talk about because of different NDAs we've got, and especially, you know, any material development or R&D projects, that's usually quite hush hush. So, but yeah, these projects were super great, and like the EA Sports project was so challenging because we needed to find the electronics, the materials, the combination of different expertises that needed to go in order to make it happen, you know, make it fit for transit, ensure that, you know, the battery doesn't run out, that the light, which was distributed from only few sides, you know, goes consistently across the entire top. These were some of the material challenges that we've had for that, but we were able to do, you know, run different tests and overcome it. And, you know, we scratched our heads quite a few times in the process, but we got there. And it's incredible to be challenged as well by, you know, by client coming to us and saying, you know, we've got this exciting project, we really want to do this. And, you know, then you have the pressure of it being shipped to some of the best football players in the world as well. So, but it all delivered. And it's just so fortunate to be able to explore and push production in these ways.
So from a packaging perspective, Nirvana is material neutral and production neutral. You're not pushing one specific style or material. You're finding the right material for the project.
Yes, that's very true. Yes. So whether it's a small project or a big project, we would still take the time to consider what is the best material for that particular purpose, or, you know, this particular packaging. Other element is as well, you know, where will it be made and then distributed? Because We are mostly known in UK because that's where we have our head office and we operate mainly from here. But that doesn't take away from the fact that we do produce different products globally, and therefore, you know, we need to make sure that all the materials that we use are fit in terms of the legislation, in terms of the regulations that are within a particular region. So, you know, like Proposition 65, right? Like it does impose certain, which I mean, I'm sure you're super aware of it and most likely know so much more than me, but you know, if we're producing something for the Californian market, it means all the materials and processes we use or all the dyes and inks that are being used for that might be different than to anywhere in the United States. But then having that awareness that, you know, this regulation is there, if we're producing for the American market, we would definitely, you know, choose the materials that are fit for the most extreme regulation scenario so that it would be applicable across the board, basically. But yeah, whether small or big, we would definitely consider that because it's a key. And especially if you want to create that sustainable story with the end story of product's death, therefore the disposal, we need to be aware as well, you know, can it be recycled? Should it be composted? What is the communication that we need to share with the client so that they know, you know, how to design, let's say, a collection service around it, or just a communication with them and their consumer?
When you're making CMF choices, how do you define what that life cycle is depending on the geography? So the life cycle of CMF.
Yes. So we would always start by understanding, like breaking down what is the life cycle. So life cycle, we simply say, consists of raw material, then production stage, use and disposal. And then if life cycle of any CMF element will begin with that raw material, which then later is processed at the manufacturing plant to be, you know, finally shaped into a defined form and function in the production process. And then that embodied functionality and let's say ascribed emotional meaning that a designer would give it would further define the duration of the consumer use. So, and then you've got the point of disposal. So first, like whatever CMF is being considered for a project, we would dive deep into what is the raw material, you know, how can be produced, manufactured, how it will be used and then disposed. And then based on that, we would divide the applicable materials for that project into ones which are linear, mixed loop or circular. So just to give you a let's say more tangible example of what I'm meaning here is like linear would be represented by, let's say, a sneaker that is often made out of like 20 to 40 different materials, which basically have been bonded so tightly together that they cannot be separated for recycling at the end of its useful life. Therefore, the value of these materials is diminished and lost. In terms of mixed loop, it would be a material that whose properties downgrade with every value recovery process, such as recycling. And you can represent it by a plastic bottle, for instance, that then can be turned into a fiber for fashion. Then that can be turned into insulation and then recovered as energy recovery. And other example would be paper as well. And whichever of these materials, you know, these are mixed loop because they cannot be recycled more than 4 to 7 times, because then they become too fragile and volatile to be of any economic value. And then the last one, circular, is defined by an infinite loop. So like it's a material that doesn't lose any of its inherent properties and can become the same product over and over again. And that could be, for instance, glass or aluminium. And these are great case studies of that. So whichever CMF we'd be choosing for a project, we would say, you know, this, let's say this material is great because it represents certain values at the stage where it was being made, but it's a linear material. And therefore, that's the kind of story you could write with it for your packaging or your product. If it's a mixed loop, you know, we can say that you could design a collection service around your packaging and therefore ensure that this material is serves its purpose as a second life material. If it's circular, then again, you know, we do that kind of, let's say, material configuration, almost like a table spreadsheet with beautiful samples. And that allows you then as a designer or a brand, you know, to take very considerate decisions and very, very meaningful decisions because, you know, okay, so, you know, if that material has these properties and it's a mixed loop material, okay, this is what I can do with it. And that's the kind of story I can write with it. And at the end of the day, there's a really nice quote that I like by Yuval Noah Harari. I'm not sure if you've read any of his books, but one of his books, 21 Questions for 21st Century, starts by the quote, humans think in stories rather than facts, numbers, or equations. And the simpler the story, the better. Every person, group, and nation has its own tales and myths. And then when you flip that and think about a brand or just creating a product, it all needs to be a story. And if the CMF of that product, this packaging, is creating an experience of that story through our perception of it, then you need to understand it to then design for it and create something cool.
So as packaging designers, we really shouldn't begin by trying to understand the brand.
I mean, No. Like you, I would say you do need to understand what the brand stands for. So, you know, is it luxury? Sure. Is it fast moving consumer good kind of brand, or is it something a bit more hip and modern for, you know, for them cool kids? So you I don't mean to. I hope I'm not offending everyone.
No, it's awesome. But I think, so a lot of times when we begin a project as packaging designers, right, we have a brief, we get the brand story, but it's more than that. It's really digging into the reason that the brand exists to then decide on the materials. If there's an opportunity for us to create something that is circular, that makes sense, that is financially makes sense for the brand, then that's the way that we should do it. And in order to do that, to understand the materials. Right. Where they come from and where they go, what can they turn
and
into afterwards.
I would definitely say, you know, don't start the material research if you don't understand the brand. You need to understand the brand because if you're designing for a luxury packaging, for instance, you need to understand that whatever material you choose, even if it's, let's say, craft paper, it needs to have an ability to create that luxury experience to be in line with what the brand stands for and represents. But it can allow you to add that additional layer to this luxury brand of sustainability. So through exploration of, let's say, vegetable-based inks or blind emboss or different textures of the craft paper, you're able then to design around that luxury feel of that particular brand, if that makes sense.
For a designer that is not well versed in CMF, but they would like to understand a little bit further as they're designing. Because a lot of times, if you're working at a design agency that does packaging, one day you might be working on aluminum cans, another day it could be glass bottles, boxes, bags. Yeah. It can range, and there's so much
that
to learn.
That is true.
You know, what's it? What would be a good resource, or where's a good place for them to begin to start learning about?
I would say there are two answers to this question. First one, the shorter one, would be that we need to acknowledge as a creative industry, just in general, as people, that we cannot Google everything. We need to, and you know, we cannot learn about everything because it's just not efficient. And for that reason, you know, people specialize in medicine, people specialize in law, people specialize in design, same as people specialize in production and materials. So I would say that a great start to projects, to any project, is to have an expert that you can basically bounce ideas back and forth from. Because as you've mentioned, you know, it can be aluminum can, it can be packaging, it can be a product, it could be a hairbrush, it could be a chair. I mean, it could be so many different things that you could be designing. Therefore, that years of knowledge and expertise that you're missing are quite hard to gather to a certain depth, just, you know, really quickly for a project. So I would say, you know, surround yourself with an expert, have a mate who knows what they're doing, or just have someone as part of their team. And if not that, you know, and that's okay. And you really want to educate yourself, you know, there are great books. There, we also write Material Monday articles, which are published very regularly, and we explore materials and insights and all the topics around sustainability at the moment as well. Another resource from us that anyone could check out is talks from our exhibition Sustainable Stories that was launched for London Design Festival. So for anyone typing in Sustainable Stories Nirvana CPH on YouTube, you'll be able to find the trailer from the exhibition and all the talks. And then our Material Mondays are on our website, nirvanacph.com. In terms of other resources, academically speaking, there are great institutions to follow. You've got TU Delft University, you've got Politecnico di Milano, Material Experience Lab, MIT Material Lab. You've got Material Science, Material Research, sorry, I always get this wrong. Material Research Science Center. I think that's how it goes. It's just too many words together. My dyslexic brain is just getting really confused sometimes. So these are good. And, you know, each of these institutions have incredible academics that are leading the way of the research. Another good one is the Center for Circular Design at UAL. It's super great. After that, you've got quite a few different websites and databases. I mean, just sure. Hit me up on LinkedIn, Katie Kubrak, and I can hook anyone up to my.
Awesome. Yeah. And then there's always Google.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, Google. Yeah. There's always Google. There's always Google, but so many. It's just so frustrating that when you're reading about different materials, I get the sense that not everyone is properly exploring what each term and different terminologies mean. And that then creates confusion for people who are not within the field.
Absolutely.
That's why my answer number one, like, always try and consult with an expert where possible.
No, absolutely. And I've found that even within, you know, simple terms for, let's say, box constructions, if an agency isn't well-versed in that true terminology, sometimes they just make up their own. And they'll call a specific structure by one name, and it just adds confusion because now somebody's referring to an RSC box as something else box. And without having clarity and communication, it just
I totally feel that. And in my world of materials and sustainability, I try to start as many projects as I can with clients, kicking off with a workshop where basically, we discuss sustainability, we explain all the different terms and their origins, where they're coming from, why do they mean what they mean, and what are the materials that represent and are representative of these terms, etc. Just to kind of have, let's say, the same foundation. So later on, when we are addressing certain elements and terminologies, people actually, you know, we all know that we're talking about the same thing. There's no room for miscommunication or confusion. And people have been, yeah, giving us quite a lot of really good feedback when it comes to that, which is really nice, because it's like creating an action through education almost. Yeah.
Absolutely. And you're elevating your client, which is either the brand or the agency or whoever it is that you're working with, and you're bringing them up to your level. Which is extremely helpful.
Exactly. And, you know, a lot of people as well, you know, they have a lot of knowledge, but it's almost because it's so sporadic from where they got it. And, you know, read a little bit here, a little bit there, a little bit here. And all of that is creating kind of like a weird mix of ingredients. Then we basically give clarity to that, which is, yeah, quite nice as well for everyone involved.
So the fact that Nirvana is production and material neutral, essentially you're only as good as your suppliers, right? Where you can design something and you can select the CMF, but if you're working with a supplier that can't achieve those, obviously you would find a new one, but the quality of the product you're delivering is only as good as that supplier. So how important is that relationship between design?
Oh, it's super, 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 super duper important. Because the moment when you've selected something in terms of colors, materials, and finishes, and you're pushing into that prototyping stage and production, you know, thanks to having that relationship established already from the beginning of the project, we're able to, you know, like mates, really, like, you know, dig deeper into conversation and have that quality of success in what we're delivering, because we're treating each other as, you know, humans and experts, and through that meaningful partnership and exchange of ideas, we're able to create and push further. And in terms of, you know, our supplier relations, we have some suppliers that we've been working with for like over a decade, and, you know, most likely in the future it's not going to change, because we just can communicate so clearly and can create great solutions together. But we're also, as I said a bit earlier, like, we do travel to globally to different conferences and exhibitions, and we continually look for new innovative solutions. So we do continue to establish new relationships as well. But it's all predominantly the same principle. We find someone, you know, we discuss, we meet, and we find that common ground between us, which is the mutual love for materials and making things better and nicer and creating that great experience for the end user as well. Because at the end of the day, that matters so much, that, you know, all the tears and effort and scratching your head that you've put into something is so positively responded to by the person who gets it.
As we're talking, my head is going in a million different directions. The fact that you've narrowed down your focus so tight to just this CMF, you know, materials and sustainability, it is so laser focused that it's interesting that as tight parameters as you've set for yourself, how broad it becomes. Like once you get really deep into materials and sustainability, it just opens up again, and it is extremely broad. So for yourself, is there a specific material that you're favoring?
Oh, it's a tricky question. it is really hard, because it truly depends on what it could be. But what I think, I do admire, like, I don't want to anyone who's going to hear this, I love a lot of different materials, and there are different levels in which I admire different materials. But one that, let's say, I can discuss in the context of sustainability that I admire greatly is basically, like, in UK, right, we use about like 5,000 coffee cups a day, and we all, I mean, I'm not sure about you, but like, I love coffee, addicted to it totally every day, right? And before this pandemic, a lot of us were guilty of just, you know, walking around and drinking coffee on the go in those coffee cups, paper coffee cups with the polyethylene lining. And that created a lot of waste because, you know, 5,000 caps that we use in UK alone every minute, and it's just a minute. So think about a pile of that in a day. So why I am mentioning this is that one of the, you know, very esteemed manufacturers in UK has taken this as a challenge. And they said, you know, we're going to try and create a recycling technology to recycle this and make that material valuable. Because what makes paper coffee cups great is that they require, you know, the best quality of virgin material. So it needs to be very long fibers. So therefore, you can take that, these cellulose fibers and create something great with it. So they've invested a lot of money into creating all the machinery and tooling to be able to do this. And then, now basically these coffee cups can be recycled into paper, which is distributed by GF Smith. It's called Extract. We've used it on a number of projects as well, actually. One of it quite recently, which was for Falden bag. That also, you know, just using this material also allowed them to create a beautiful exhibition space during London Fashion Week in September. So I would say this is one of the materials that I really like at the moment, because when it comes to off-the-shelf colors, the colors are beautiful as well, and they're all natural. But you can always go custom if you have, you know, big enough project for it as well.
Sure.
Yeah.
So talking about the cup recycling as a material that's out there that you're interested in, why is it so difficult to recycle cups?
yeah, start, of course. I just jumped right into it. So when it comes coffee cups, they are lined with synthetic material, which is most often polyethylene. And basically that tight bond between the cellulose fiber on the outside and the polyethylene molecules on the inside has always made it very challenging to separate both and be able to recycle it. And in terms of the economics of the recycling process, it wasn't viable, and people who collect waste, they also didn't have any incentive to separate the coffee cups in the first place. So what is great about James Cropper's, which came up with that technology called CapCycling, they basically created a lot of partnerships which allowed them to build a very very closely knitted supply chain. So they've teamed up with you know, companies like Starbucks, Cafe Nero, McDonald's, Costa Coffee, many different coffee shop outlets in UK, and that basically then feeds them that stock into their recycling. And on the top of that, people who separate the cups from the waste, recycling waste, then they get that additional financial incentive as well. I'm not sure of the exact details how much they get paid, but it is enough for them to have the right, exactly, yeah. So they increasingly have been getting more and more coffee cups. So also what is important to notice here, you know, when we're trying to write that sustainable story of them through the materials that we use for our products, if we are a new coffee shop and we want to create, you know, all the single use items that we have sustainable, we at that point are at, you know, a decision to we need to make a decision. Should we go with the let's say the old style kind of coffee cup with the polyethylene lining, which now can be recycled? Or should we use a coffee cup with compostable lining, which not every industrial composting facility will accept. So then you're at the point where you need to as well, you know, find the right words and ways to communicate to your consumers. And that exhibition that I mentioned, Sustainable Stories for the London Design Festival that we did, in that exhibition, we featured this particular paper as well as one of the stories. And each of the stories that we featured, and it was five stories, had a technology element to it. So showcasing how current technologies can be leveraged in order to better communicate with your consumer as to what you're actually doing. So for instance, for the coffee cup, what we did was an application through which you can get reward points. And if you're recycling the coffee cup, you're getting, you know, one rewards point, which later on can get you a free coffee, basically. But at the same time, you're also seeing the impact of everyone on this particular time and day making the same impact. So you're seeing, you know, that this actually will be recycled. It's not just empty words. This will be recycled. And this is, you know, how many coffee cups in that particular day will be recycled, how many coffee cups in that particular month or year have been recycled. So giving that tangibility as well to the things you choose for your sustainable pillars.
Definitely familiar with Proper and their cup cycling, you know, and GF Smith and their offering. And actually, I've got them on schedule to talk to them at some point. Also, I'm really excited about digging into that with them. So now that we know that Katie's favorite material,
there's another quite interesting one that I came up recently, which is dissolvable garment bags. Yeah. Wow. There are a few people that are making this, but it's interesting because the material that they were using for it is also used in, for instance, medical industry as dissolvable stitches. Mm-hmm. So it's that the same.
Wow.
Yeah, it's quite interesting. So that's like really geeky me geeking out on the science behind this.
So before we start wrapping up, I do have a question. So on the dissolvable garment bags or the dissolvable plastic, we've all seen the videos of the man that puts the plastic bag in the cup and spins it and then drinks it. What do those things dissolve into?
Very great question. They dissolve into smaller molecules, which break down. But then depending on what molecule that is, it will either be harmful or non-toxic. And when it comes to and I did actually quite a lot of research into this because I was very interested. I'm always very skeptical when it comes to any material novelty, because I always worry that,
100%.
You know, we might have some great infrastructures for certain materials, but instead of exploiting these more and focusing on them, we just, you know, jump into the first new thing. So I approach these things always from a very skeptical standpoint. I've read a lot of research papers and research into the material, whether it's harmful or not, and I couldn't find anything to say that it was harmful. And I will leave this, you know, to the experts as well, right? Because there are certain areas in which my expertise finishes. But in terms of chemistry and biology, these are not proven harmful or toxic to us when we drink or consume it. And one of the reasons is, you know, it's also used as stitches, the dissolvable stitches in our bodies. So it's just that extension of something that's already, let's say, is a close part of our material reality.
No, for sure. And I think that's something important to consider.
Yeah, nice. As my dog. I wish I had a dog. So nice.
No, I think that's something definitely important to consider is, you know, you sometimes have to go into these things with a skeptical eye. You know, in the US, there were flushable wipes, right? Yeah. So these wipes that you can flush down the toilet, they came up with, and it was like, oh my gosh, this is the greatest thing ever. It goes down the toilet. Yeah. Wonderful. You don't have to put it in the trash. Then, you know, a few months later after it became a big it was a success. People were buying all over the country.
Then
the sewage waste plants had to come back and say, you cannot flush these things because they're clogging up our systems. That's where product is developed and you don't look at the entire infrastructure and the effects that it has down the line. So I always think about that when I see these foams, the EPE replacement foams that you can put in the sink and they dissolve. And it's like, well, what does that dissolve into? And if you have an entire building of people dissolving this into their plumbing.
No, it is a very good concern. And I'm similarly skeptical to you. What I would always advise, and some clients are super excited about these things as well, but what I always try to convince people of is that, you've put so much energy and resource into making this particular material, but then all of a sudden you're going to dissolve it. So its life is very linear and very short and very limited. Whereas if, let's say, you make, like paper form, like color form, pulp, mold for your insert, for instance, then that can be, for instance, shipped back to you and you can reuse it, or you can recycle it and then that can become something. So the value of that material is not lost. So yeah, I would always try and convince people to try and extend the life of every material. However, this is super cool and geeky. So there are pros and cons to everything. So you always need to find, let's say, 3 or 4 pillars that matter to you as a designer or a brand. And then once you have these pillars, whether it's, the carbon footprint, or whether it's water use, or whether it's, regenerative processes, etc., then based on that, you can, again, better choose maybe. Yeah. I can talk and talk about it. So
I'm just looking at all the questions that I've got. So I think what I'm going to have to do, Katie, is I'm going to have you back on to get even deeper.
That's great. I look forward to that.
No, absolutely. So what we're going to do, Katie, is I'm going to have amazing. All the links to connect with you, to Nirvana, to some of the books that you mentioned and some of the resources as well. I think that that's just going to be important for everybody to learn more.
Amazing.
Absolutely. Perfect. And once again, it's Katie Kubrock, materials and insight producer with Nirvana CPH out of London. Thank you so much for
thank you for having me. Thank you so much.
Absolutely. It's been such a good time.
Kubrock, material and insights producer with Nirvana, discussing CMF, MDD, and reviews of sustainable packaging. Check out the show notes for links on how to connect directly with Katie and the resources mentioned in our discussion. Please take a minute to rate, review, and subscribe, as it'll be a huge help. This is Package Design Unboxed with me, your host, Evelio Matos. Thank you once again to Katie, and thanks to you for listening. Talk soon.